Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Yes, we're back. It's Inside Boxing Live, presented by PBV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is Chris Algieri coming off of a weekend where we actually had fights. So we will talk about some fights in the boxing world. We saw Nioa Inoue get in the ring. We saw some fights overseas. We saw some fights in Las Vegas with Diego Pacheco and all that and more. But it's also a fight week as we gear up to head out to Las Vegas for David Benavidez versus David Morrell. It is the first very big fight of 2025. So join us and order along on PPV.com. This is going to be a huge PPV.com week for us. If you've been following this show, you know that they are our proud and presenting sponsors. So order the fight, Benavidez Morrell. You know you're going to watch it. It's one of the best fights of the year, prime versus prime. So go ahead and do it on PPV.com. No subscriptions. Just pop your email in. You don't have to sign up for anything. You can join us in the live chat. Be me, Chris, Jim Lampley, and Lance Pugmire. So go ahead and follow the link in the description on YouTube and on iTunes, and then follow along all week long. We're going to have a Benavidez Morrell fight in-ring breakdown coming out on Tuesday, and then a ton of content from Las Vegas in the desert. I bring in Chris Algieri now with that being said, in the desert.
I'm certainly not in the desert right now, as you can tell. I'm in the frigid north. I've got snow outside my window. So, you know, I'm not home in Florida. I'm in New York.
Well, to talk weather at the beginning of the show, which we do sometimes, it was snowing in Florida, too.
Well, parts of Florida. I mean, I live far from that, very far from where that snow was.
Right before we started taping the show, Mr. T's head popped off.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's behind my desk right now.
Our pets' friends, our pets' heads are falling off.
Did you see Sylvester Stallone? Did you see that clip that's making
the
rounds?
I did. When he's talking about the small gloves, they didn't even use these gloves anymore. Guys were tougher back then. Yikes.
That was just like, I feel like I understand what he was getting at, but it was just the way, he was a clumsy way of him presenting it. He almost gave off like back in my day when I was a fighter.
Right, like, right.
No, bro, that
was
a movie.
And that's how a lot of people took it. Yeah, I know, bro, that was a movie.
Like,
you are not the Tulsa King. Just so you know, you're not the Tulsa King. You're not Rocky. You're not Rambo.
You're not Rambo. You're definitely not. You might be in the International Boxing Hall of Fame, which is like kind of a joke. But you've done a lot for boxing. I will not going to lie. He's one of the most influential figures in boxing because of that. What that franchise means. But like he went a little too far there. I kind of get what he's saying, but just like, bro, don't compare yourself. And then Devin Haney took the bait and was like, this freaking guy doesn't know the difference between a left hook and he doesn't know anything.
And yeah, a fish hook. A left hook and a fish hook. That was actually pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, it was big boober energy vibes on that one coming Sly.
Yeah, his like fourth wife was probably filming it for him. And honey, put that on X. Put that on X. They'll love that on X. And then he gets clowned by the boxing community because the boxing community is very like has their pitchforks out a lot, like had their knives out a lot. If you're an outsider, even if you're Sly. And you say something about boxing, even like the boxing fans will just snipe in on you. Like it's nothing.
We also don't like to hear from people who are not within our community that way. And yes, he's in the boxing community, but he's an actor. Yes, he was in the most famous boxing movie franchise of all time, but you're not a fighter. And fighters don't like to hear about that.
Yeah, a real fight is coming up this weekend in Las Vegas. David Benavidez, David Morrell. It is officially fight week for those two. I tweeted out something on the X machine and got a little pushback because I said fight of the year. You know,
it's the first big fight, you know, of
the year.
Tweet.
So
yeah.
Because it confused people. I said 1 week out from Benavidez Morrell, which is the 2025 fight of the year. And I got a lot of people like, come on, man. February 20th.
You're technically not wrong. You're technically not wrong.
It's not even the best fight of the month.
Very, very clever.
But the what I was trying to say is this fight could be the fight of the year. Yeah, like Beterbiev and Bivol are fighting later on this month, and their first fight was not the fight of the year, but it was still a big fight. Like, I'm saying fight of the year. Are we going to find two more evenly matched competitors at this stage in their career than Morel and Benavidez this year? I hope so, but yeah, it'd be hard.
I mean, this I think people are losing sight of like how good this fight actually is, or maybe they're just, you know, overlooking it. You know, this is a tremendous matchup of, like you said, of guys that are in their actual primes, and it's a real pick'em fight. Like, people are probably leaning more towards Benavidez, but not by much. You know, I think a lot of people probably have this like a 60-40 fight. I think you had said that on one of our earlier episodes. This is 50-50 as it gets for me. I think I can see how both guys can win. So not only is it a great matchup in terms of when it's happening in their careers, it's a really good fight. It's a good matchup in terms of styles and who they are.
That's what I mean. The styles alone, I think, can generate fireworks. Like, Bivol and Beterbiev, we thought was going to generate fireworks. And who knows? A February 22nd card could produce a fight of the year. We can get a fight of the year from two obscure fighters. We can get it from anywhere. But I just think this one has all the makings for it. If you throw in the fact that I think they're just so evenly matched, you throw in, like, Benavidez is going to come forward. Morel is going to be a boxer and move her in there with power, too. That's another thing, too. Morel has a lot of power. And everyone's looking at Benavidez as the power puncher. But it might be Morel at 175, mm-hmm. who is the better one-punch power guy. Which is kind of crazy.
I've been thinking that Morel is going to be the guy that you're going to see the bigger, cleaner, flush shots, you know, from, that can probably do more damage. But the issue is, you know, what kind of chin does Benavidez have? His defense has always been good, you know, but what happens when he does get hit with a clean one from a guy who's a legitimate puncher at 175? You know, we've yet to see that.
Right. That's the beauty of this fight, and they throw in the fact that it has, the stakes are very high, because one guy replied to me and was like, "You talking about the how can a fight be fight of the year if it's for a Reggie belt?" I was like, "What? Like, who cares what belt it's for?" That's like archaic way of thinking about boxing. Yeah. Like, just because it's for a secondary belt, it can't be a really good fight. Both these guys are looking to get to the next rung. Like, Benavidez has been on that for like a while now. This guy was a champion when he was 21 years old. He wants to get to that next step. The next step is fighting Beterbiev or Bivol. I think Canelo's in the rear view. Canelo had some things to say about Benavidez earlier this week over in Riyadh. And then Morel is trying to, like, with a win, Morel can just take Benavidez's spot, like, that quick. That's crazy to me. That's the craziest part about this, is when you have these guys squaring off, I would say 3 and 4 in the light heavyweight division. And I would say Benavidez is 3, Morel is 4. Morel can, boom, hop right over Benavidez with a win, and then can get himself right into a fight with Beterbiev or Bivol. So this is a de facto tournament that we're seeing taking place at light heavyweight in the month of February.
Yeah, that's the thing about Morel. I mean, yes, it's very hard to take a fight like this so early in your career where a loss, you're like, oh man, you know, the guy's only got a handful of fights and he's already got a loss. But, you know, he's going the Lomachenko route, where he's starting early, getting in these big opportunities. And listen, even Lomachenko took a loss and still came back and has been one of the best of our generation. So I like the way Morel is moving. And I mean, a win here is so big. I haven't even thought that much about Morel, what his future looks like if he wins here. But, like, yeah, you just laid it out beautifully. He's going to jump right into all these spots. And he'll also be well-known, because that's the thing. His profile's not that big. Us boxing heads, yeah, we know about him. We know how good he is. We know how good this fight is. The rest of the world doesn't. He goes out there and he beats David Benavidez on a big stage in a main event, you know, early in the year. Yeah, this is going to catapult his career. No question.
I could also see, yeah, for sure. I can also see, if it's a really close fight, a rematch. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a very close fight. I am leaning Benavidez early because of the experience, but, you know, Morel has a ton of amateur experience, and he's just so athletic. And Benavidez, haven't seen him in there with someone this in their prime like this, or someone this close to their prime. Speaking of prime, this is way off. I wasn't even expecting to talk about this. But Sean Porter hopped into the main event booth yesterday for the Pacheco fight. Did you catch that?
I did. Yep.
And he said that you're closer to your prime at 36, 37 than you are at 24, 25. Do you agree with that?
No, not at all. And he said this, and I've actually talked. I've actually talked to him about this. You know, because this is something that he's been saying lately.
He said it so matter of factly too.
Yeah, it's very funny because he retired multiple years before he turned 36. So I don't really know what he's getting at. But I can see maybe the idea is that in terms of the skill set, you know, and the experience, which is absolutely true. And I say this all the time. I'm a better fighter now based on my boxing knowledge, but my body is not the same. Right. If I could take my brain that I have now in terms of my knowledge and experience and put it in 28-year-old body of Chris Algieri, forget it.
That's interesting to think of. So you think 28 is like the body prime, and then
I say 28
brain
to 32.
Prime is now.
Yeah, and brain prime is going to be like your late 30s.
So maybe that's
40s,
what Porter was trying to say.
Yeah, absolutely. But also, your earning potential is usually highest around, you know, those ages. You see the guys making their biggest paydays after 36. You know, so that's part of it too. But I understand where he's coming from in terms of how difficult this sport is to be good at. It takes a lifetime to master, and nobody does it. But also because our bodies degrade, we have a very small window to be an actual physical prime. So in terms of the overlap of when your physical prime and your mental prime meet, where is that? Is that 32? Is that 33? Yeah. You know, that's really where you're going to be, you know, arguing the finer nuances of that discussion.
Or you're Floyd Mayweather, and you seem to put it all together at a very young age, and your physical prime lasts into your late 30s. That's why, say what you want about Floyd, guy's an all-time great.
Looking better and better. And in the rearview mirror, in hindsight, Floyd is just looking better and better all the time.
Yeah, I was on another podcast earlier this week as a guest, which was interesting because I'm usually the one asking the questions. So it was nice to get presented some questions. Let's check out my guy, Sherry Abassi, TKO podcast. I was talking about Mayweather and how he brought up Keith Thurman. And we were talking about how careers come and go so fast in boxing. Like Thurman had like 3 or 4 good years fighting twice a year, 3 times a year. So Mayweather doing twice a year at least, and Canelo doing twice a year and Pacquiao for like 10, 15 years is crazy. Absolutely insane.
Yeah, like, well, they're the cream of the crop. I mean, you really got to. Yeah,
that's the 1%.
There's level. That's the 0.01%. Those guys are next level. Becoming world champion makes you in the you know 0.1 in the 1%. You know, like when you're a guy like that who's on top of the sport for a decade plus, forget it. I mean,
like never taking
such a hard business
breaks
in every way.
Right. Never like Floyd took a few small retirement breaks and all that, but never like just going every September, every May or when Pacquiao was on that schedule. It's really something like I love longevity. That's the thing that really impresses me the most in all of sports. Like Derek Jeter playing 20 plus years, Kobe playing LeBron playing into his 40s. Longevity to me is like the ultimate sign of an elite all time great. Obviously, like if you play for 20 years, you have to be great. If you box for 20 years, you have to have luck. You have to have skill. You have to have, you know, discipline.
But you also have to have the knowledge to adjust. Like I always think about Bernard Hopkins, right? Another one of these guys who had a very long extended career who fought late, but he was a different guy. He transitioned. He became a different thing. Even though he fought in the same weight class for the most part, he didn't move up till later. You know, his entire style changed. His ring mannerism changed. Everything changed. He adapted. He got better. And that's when you talk about longevity, that's what I think about. Because again, I don't care who you are physically, you're just not going to be the same thing. You can't do the dynamic movements that you did when you were younger. Risk of injury, plus also injury, scar tissue, things build up, joints getting tighter and leaner. I mean, my body changed a lot during my career because it's so hard on your actual physicality. So being able to adjust your style or adjust your game, you know, if we're talking about other sports, that's really impressive when guys do that. They're aware of their decline, but they're upping their game. That's super impressive.
Pacquiao comes to mind. Like he,
different guy.
Really changed his output. He was like 80 punches around, like at 126, 130, 135. Was only at 135 for a short amount of time.
And was an absolute destroyer, mowing through guys.
Even up until 2010, the Margarito fight is when he kind of changed because that fight took so much out of him. But he was throwing 75, 80 around, and then he changed. Like when you fought him, he was in the mid-40s.
Yeah, he was boxing. He was like a different, totally different guy.
Wild. We'll see if Benavidez and Morel can get to that level. I think Benavidez has been on tops for so long. He's 21 years old. People forget this guy was a world champion. And he lost those belts, never like in the ring. He lost those belts for drug use, cocaine, and missing weight during COVID, which some people out there still try to hold against him. The missing the weight potentially cost him a Canelo fight because he would have been champ for a while. Canelo wanted all those belts. You know, it's crazy how that all works. He missed the weight during, COVID. Like, it wasn't – he was having issues with the weight.
It's tough, you know, because when you had to fight in COVID, you had to fight in quote-unquote bubbles where, you know, we would do shows. And there were some shows that were going on. I was involved in a lot of them, actually. And I got to see what was going on, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak. And, you know, guys, you couldn't cut weight properly. Couldn't get in gyms. You know, travel was tough. So you had guys who were missing weight. It happened quite a bit during COVID. So, like, I know you said people are holding it over him, but
no, people do hold it. I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, he's a different guy now. He's changed. He's matured so much.
Oh, my God, yeah. But, like, even if you're struggling to make weight to begin with, Benavidez, I don't think he was as locked in as he is now in terms of the making the 168. I think he hired more – he just had more people around him to help him get that down to that weight. So
money helps, by the way. Money helps when you can expand your team and –
Right, you can hire Chris Algieri to keep you on weight. But if you are someone that has issues with the weight and you throw in the restrictions with COVID where you can only go to the hotel gym for 40 minutes and you can't leave your room, you have to boil down those final 3-4 pounds. You have to do it like in a hotel room with not the best facilities and not the best stuff. Yeah, that's what happened to Benavidez, and that was a long time ago. People still hold it against him, but he's kind of he's obviously rebuilt himself. Very nicely, Morel. I can't wait for this fight. I can't wait to get out to Las Vegas. The whole card is really good. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Fulton Figueroa too, which I think could steal the show. Going to throw a ton of punches. I don't know what Fulton has left. I think the Inoue fight took a lot out of him physically and mentally. He went over there and suffered I wouldn't say embarrassing, but like he got his ass handed to him in that fight.
Yeah, he got washed.
He made a lot of money. Too. That's another thing. You make that first big check, and you know we're only human. So some
of
that.
If he didn't come back and struggle so mightily, you know, in that comeback fight, I would say, you know, listen, he took a bad loss to one of the best. It is what it is.
Right.
He got beat, whatever. But now he's back. But the fact that he struggled so hard with what was his name? Who did he fight?
Carlos Castro.
Castro, exactly. So he struggled in that fight. He got dropped. You know, had to like really scrape tooth and nail to get a split decision. Makes me think it's like, come on, this guy was on top for a long time. Like he was beating everybody. If you look at he's a record. You got to really like study. You got to look how many O's that guy took along the way to getting that Inoue fight. Never had an easy fight his whole career.
No, and Figueroa is always in good fights. Might have a little bit more left in the tank.
And he's a beast. The kid's
defense kind of goes
out. He's long. Yeah. Doesn't mind getting hit. What's with those Figueroa boys? They don't mind getting hit at all. Like both of them.
The brother.
His brother was the same way.
Omar is the brother, right? The older one?
Yeah. Yep.
He was. Remember his style? Like,
yeah. It's just
he
right
reminded
in front
me of the Me, Myself, and Irene, Jim Carrey. I posted that once and people were cracking up. Like, had that one fight where he was doing some weird movements in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of fights. But he got hit a lot, dude. He got hit a lot. And he kept moving up in weight, too. He had trouble making weight for a while. Kept moving up, but didn't change his style. Was still getting hit by these bigger punchers. Eventually ran out, obviously. But, these guys are big, durable guys.
Pitbull Cruz is also on this card recently in the news.
Yeah, Fierro fights. That's a tough fight, man. That's not an easy fight. That's another sleeper fight. That fight could be a lot of fun.
That's why, say what you will, why he turned down the Ryan Garcia fight. If you don't believe that, he thought it was bad luck, and he's just focusing on Fierro first. Admirable, but we'll see what Pitbull's got. If he wins, he's right back in the mix because he's so popular and such a fan-friendly style. Jesus Ramos Jr., Jason Rosario. I fear for Jason Rosario's health.
Yeah.
Fear for his – Ramos is no joke.
Nope.
That is a big boy, 23 years old. 23 or 20 – he's young. That kicks off the card. It'll be a fun night. I will be on the main broadcast giving my betting picks for DraftKings.
Look at this, Dan. You're a guest on podcasts. You're actually on main broadcasts for fights. What's going on here?
Moving up, baby. Moving up. Won my first bet of the year last night by picking Diego Pacheco by decision. Chris, you lost. I know you didn't bet anything.
I didn't bet, but actually, my brother, the reason that you and I were speaking about that fight, because I thought that Pacheco was going to stop Nelson. You said, you said something really, really poignant. Pacheco tends to play with his food lately. I'm like, you know, and you're very much.
Did he ever? We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, the Benavidez Morel card is coming up this week. We're going to be in Las Vegas, heading out there Tuesday night, doing the old Tuesday to Sunday shift. We're going to have a lot of content. Two live shows, Thursday and Friday from Radio Row and the Media Center. We'll have you covered with all sorts of content, you know, the fun stand-up stuff that I do with the fighters. We'll see who's there. We'll have a good time, and we'll bring some behind the scenes. A lot of people want to see vlogs, I heard. They want to see us behind the scenes, hanging out, walking through the casinos. So maybe we'll have Mitch, our super producer, film a few things there. But order the fight on PPV.com. We're going to be pushing vlogs. The heck out of that.
I like that idea. I like the vlog idea. We have smart listeners. I know I say that all the time, but good suggestions, these guys.
There's a lot of vlogs out there in like the content world, sports world, but not really in the boxing. So one day we'll do it because I'm focused on so many other things. Like we're trying to do a million things that I usually forget about. Oh, that'd be cool for everyone to see.
But also, we always tell everyone how hard we work on these trips. Like everyone thinks we're having fun in Vegas, but like it's literally nonstop work. So a vlog would be a good way to chronicle that, so people can understand that what we actually do is not all fun and games.
It's a lot of running around, a lot of editing, a lot of editing inside the hotel room, a lot of posting on my phone, a lot of hey, this guy's ready for an interview, or let's run to this event, let's go.
A lot of discussions and meetings over food, and
that's the best part.
Figuring out what our next plan of attack is and how we can generate more content for you guys.
Just food.
Yeah, a lot of food. A lot of food.
Barry's Prime. Our president was at Circa last night, walking through the Circa.
Saw that.
Circa Lounge. Circa, I wish. Actually, don't wish. I like that where it is located. We go to Circa and we go to Barry's every trip now. And it's nice because we get in the Uber. A little 15, 20-minute ride. Collect your thoughts a little bit. Leave the strip, the craziness, and just enter a meat cave. a meat cabin. It's a meat cave. Has anyone ever been to Barry's?
Anyone listening, I do not go to the meat cave with Dan. He goes, he does, that's something he does when I'm not around.
Wait, that happens, that's cave. In the room as well. I'm in the meat cave. The meat cave, it's a meat cave. You go down the steps, you lose all service. It's just you and the meat.
It's true. We do lose service down there, which is actually awesome. Another thing I like about it. Like you give me. Who did we run into last week? We ran into Michael Chandler and
Michael Chandler. I saw Tiesto there once. I saw you always see someone there. Like that's somebody. The spot now. Everyone goes there. Like our guy Mario is always posting. Some of the celebrities stop there. That's the spot now. It's awesome. So that is our Vegas stuff. A ton more. We just wanted to get a little quick overview of Benavidez Morel, get our talking points in a row, and then really hit it this week. Let's talk about Naoya Inoue. Naoya Inoue blast out you.
The monster.
June Kim, four rounds. Kim's final words, final movements were, bring it on, bring it on, bring it on. I'm eating. I'm on the canvas. My face is dead.
Yep.
That was nuts.
That was nuts. I mean, it was kind of what was expected. How'd you do betting wise?
Didn't bet this one. The odds were horrible. But
you could do over under. But that was probably the only smart bet.
I think was the over on four.
I think it was 4.5, or maybe it was 3.5. Might have been 3.5.
Yeah, it might have been. I didn't even bother. I got up at the nick of time and I had it on. This is what I love about Inoue is that this was a replacement fight. This was a 10-day out replacement fight. It was supposed to fight Sam Goodman. And he still delivered a highlight reel knockout.
Yep.
Like, still. Like, the dude waving him on.
He's one of the most consistent performers in the game. Like,
yes.
Listen, you generally when a fight falls through and then you got a last-minute replacement, you're like, eh, shit. You know, with Inoue, anyway, you're like, all right, cool. Now we're going to see someone getting, like, highlight reel knocked out. So, like, that's exactly what he gets.
It wasn't like a TKO. It wasn't like this guy just takes some punishment in like the seventh round and
quits.
You know, I'm losing interest and like, all right, I'm about to fall back asleep. Seventh round, he stops him and the ref puts him out of his misery. Ref throws corner throws in the towel. But he gets concussive like one punch knockout still, and they're just awesome and they go viral and it's why he's so damn popular. is because his highlights go viral. Why is Tank so popular? Why is Mike Tyson so popular? Why are knockout punchers so popular, especially in this day and age where hit that knockout was on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, you name it, within seconds, because it's 15 seconds and yep. It's always badass. And I love the guy.
It's always badass. He's badass. And he,
always.
The guy delivers.
Consistent he's badass. Just,
we say it all the time. He's an entertainer. He understands like that, like how you win matters. He talks about, you know, the Japanese fighting spirit. He's a warrior. He wants to love show that. That time and time again. I love that too. You know, and it's not like he's being stupid. Like there, we get punched and like going tit for tat. He's still doing it behind an excellent jab. And he's a smart boxer. He just has that power, man. He's got that light switch that he can just turn you off at any time.
I learned that you cannot even say even a slightly bad thing about Naoya Inoue on Twitter, and you will get roasted, or you will get clapped back. It wasn't even crazy what I said. I said the thing about Inoue is he's gonna get hit. He was getting hit flush.
He gets hit,
but that's not a criticism. That's simply an observation. The guy, as far as you want to go back, gets hit with shots. Because he's willing to stand and trade. That warrior spirit, that, remember? Mm-hmm. He said he doesn't like some of the fighters over American in the U.S. because mm-hmm. they don't take chances. How do you take chances? You take chances by standing in the pocket. And if you're going to jump in the pool, you're going to get wet. You're going to stand in the pocket. You're going to get hit by Yi Jun Kim.
In baseball, you're a baseball guy. Home run hitters, they strike out a lot.
Yeah.
Because they're taking risks. You're taking risks. Knockout punchers, they get hit. It's just part of it. He gets hit, but guess what? We want him to get hit. We want to see people get hit. We don't want to see one-sided, you know, thrashings and him just knocking people out, like fighting cab drivers. He's fighting good fighters is another thing. So he's going to get hit. Yeah. So, but that's what makes him that entertaining.
Right. I tweeted that out and a bunch of people quote tweeting it like, oh, wow, boxer gets hit.
Jerk.
No, boxer gets hit. Huge observation, Dan. Oh, look. it's always guys that don't follow me, which makes me feel better. It's always like the people that follow me understand what that means. Like, obviously you're gonna get hit in boxing, but when you say, oh, that guy gets hit, that means he's not known as like he's known as someone that will take a few shots to land a few. Where if you're not like a you don't follow, but you're probably not a huge boxing fan, and you're like, why is this guy saying that a boxer got hit? Like, is he expected not to get hit? No, like he's more willing to stand and trade. And I'm just curious what's going to happen when he faces big punchers because, I mean, Neary dropped him.
Yeah.
Neary dropped him. He was a puncher. Like, I wasn't expecting much from Yi Jun Kim. He did nail him with a few shots. And that's in a way lunging in. It's in a way standing in proximity and taking these shots. I want to talk about what's next for Inoue because Inoue is kind of like the Canelo mold. Where his whole year is planned out. He's like a Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. Like his whole
year is.
This guy is a business. He's an economy in himself. And his whole year is planned out. So Bob Arum, God bless his soul, guy's in freaking Japan, 90 million years old, rolls into the ring. That's what he does. And gets on the mic. And his next fight. So Inoue's next fight is going to be in Las Vegas. And they're looking at David Allen Picasso, not the artist. The boxer. Okay. And then they're looking at a Saudi Arabia fight in late December as part of Riyadh season against potentially Nick Ball at 126. So are you telling me that Inoue is going to leave 122 pounds without fighting MJ Akpadaliev and without potentially fighting Junto Nakatani?
I don't like that. I don't like that. I want both those fights. I always wanted the MJ fight. I thought that was a really great fight. And then also, if he moves up to 26, then that's another weight class away from Nakatani. That's another fight that seems to be out of the discussion as well.
Did you hear what he said about Nakatani? He goes, I haven't been really wowed by anything he's done yet.
Is that the classic talk the guy down? So kind of you had to divert the attention away from, you know, Floyd used to do that.
Floyd did that, but he also would say, hell of a fighter. He would always hype up his fighters.
But he did that on purpose when he wanted to make a fight. if he wants to fight, if you want to fight, you talk the guy up. You know, so if you don't want to fight, you talk the guy down. That's classic.
Mayweather was the McGregor Brilliant. Buildup. Was
Brilliant
talking
of that.
He made McGregor out to be Muhammad Ali in like gave the fight some credence, which you're supposed to do. Inoue says that Nakatani's got nothing for me. Nakatani's not even in the same weight class right now. He's at 118. Inoue's at 122 with eyes on 126. The MJ Akwadalia saga is not going anywhere. Our guy Eddie Hearn went absolutely ballistic in Vegas, you know, because Eddie always has a camera in front of him. It's the beauty of that guy. He's never stopping. And he says, why should Inoue get to duck his mandatory three times? His resume is pretty shit. Inoue is very disappointing as a champion. Inoue, time to be taken out of the pound for pound list.
Obviously, really going hard for his guy.
Obviously, that's frustration because if you've been following the saga with Akhmadaliev, he was the WBA mandatory. He fights Topalis, loses to Topalis. People forget that. Loses to Topalis. Topalis goes on to give Inoue some tough rounds. MJ Akhmadaliev has to go back to the end of the line. Akhmadaliev has two decent wins, like safe fights. Just to keep that Inoue ticket, that lottery ticket, Inoue goes on to not fight him. He passed him over. I get both sides. I do want to see that fight, though, Chris.
I do, too. I've always wanted that fight. I think the scrappiness that MJ brings to the table, he's a very tight, compact little guy, but he's super efficient. I'd like to see what would happen if he gets on the inside with Inoue, and if he can take the power, of course. That's the thing about Inoue. I think it's a great fight. I think it's an entertaining fight. MJ generally makes entertaining fights as well. So you got two guys who can entertain. And I don't think MJ beats Inoue, but I think it's fun while it lasts.
No, he doesn't beat him, but he gives him issues. Inoue's outstanding. We just talked about how awesome he is. But listen, the guy does get hit. He's going to get hit in this fight. And Akhmadaliev can crack. It's just interesting to see because I just don't see it in the plans because I don't see the Akhmadaliev fight as the one that's happening next in Vegas. Very excited that Inoue is coming to the States. Akhmadaliev, it's not going to be that. Like I see that as a Saudi fight. I see this potentially as a Tokyo fight. So Picasso gets the fight in May or whatever, June, in Vegas, and then they're already talking about Inoue going to Riyadh. If he sticks at 122, then yes, Akhmadaliev will definitely get that shot in December. If he goes to 126, which we've been talking about for a while, you know, it's a whole new ballgame for Inoue. This is like a whole new discussion. And Nick Ball waiting for him there, not exactly the first name I wanted to see at featherweight.
No.
But like, we're looking at a whole different part of Inoue's career, Chris. Like the second half, he might not be as dominant. We're going to see what he's really made of. He's going to potentially get into like all, he really is an all-time great, but like what stratosphere would he be in if he just starts handling featherweights?
Dude, featherweight, that's when the guys start getting big. That's a big jump. The 22 to 26 jump is a major one in the sport. Featherweights, it's funny, featherweights is where like the West starts paying attention. Like, okay, yeah, there's this weight class is under featherweight? No, there's not.
Right, 126, a little bit bigger. Yeah,
that's where you start paying attention. And the reason for that is because the guys are bigger. They hit hard. It's going to be interesting. You get guys who are 6 feet tall like we do now at featherweight. You know, you've got
Espinosa
and even Ray Vargas was another guy super tall for the weight class. You're not getting those at 22. So it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with the physicality of those guys. Again, you mentioned he got dropped by Nery at 122. You know, he's not the same guy in terms of his size in the ring anymore, obviously. At 26, so interesting matchups there. And again, Ronnie, like you said, Ronnie Rios is not the one that I really. They love him over there. The Riyadh guys, the Saudi loves.
You're talking Ronnie about Nick
Rios.
Ball, right?
I'm Nick Ball. Sorry, I don't know. Because they just fought
short. You're thinking of a short, bruising fighter.
Yeah. I mean, Ball's I like least. Nick Ball too. He's fun. I don't know. I don't see him at that level.
Inoue beats him.
Yeah,
obviously, but like
it actually probably is a good entry for him into 126 because he's got a lot of holes to be able to yeah. Drop that power.
But like in a way, going to 126 at the end of the year, leaving Japan, like this was his last fight in Japan this year, which is, and it does kind of make me up. Like as much as I want to see him in the U.S., it's like, oh man, his fans at home are not going to see him on that stage anymore. And then he's leaving the two fights behind, or one fight that we really want to see behind. That's the Nakatani one. And then he's going up to 126 where he might, you know, not be as dominant. That's the nature of the game. You know, you have to face the best. He is 30. It's not, you know, towards the end of his career, but he's definitely in the second half. Or
it's amazing how he's carried his power, though. He's still knocking guys out. I wonder if he still has that at 26. So we talk about these guys. You know, earlier, we were talking about longevity. You know, I mentioned Bernard Hopkins. You know, Floyd Mayweather is another guy for overlooked. The power changed. Even Manny Pacquiao, the power changed, you know, as he started moving up. And in a way, that hasn't been the case yet. So it's 26 when we actually have to see him box for 12 rounds. It's an interesting time. An interesting time in his career trajectory.
Yeah, this is, we're going to see what this guy really is at featherweight. If this plan go, if this is the plan, because he could just stay at 122 after the Picasso fight, maybe Nakatani, maybe fight Akhmadaliev. Let's go to the fights that we saw on Saturday. Main event from Las Vegas at the Cosmopolitan saw Diego Pacheco go the distance with a very tough, very game. Steven Nelson, Pacheco gets the win. He's only 23 years old. Steven Nelson, tougher than a $2 steak, Chris.
I was really impressed with Pacheco. It looked like I'm watching it, and I'm watching it with my brother, and I'm like, man, his defense is good. He's slipping and sliding. He's making the punches miss. He's boxing. It looked like they were going out there with the thought in their head. They're like, you know what? I'm going to show the world that I can box too, and I am a well-rounded fighter. And he came out fighting pretty cautiously early on. And Nelson, doing what he needed to do, being a smaller guy, he was kind of stout for the weight class, fighting a super tall, long guy, trying to get on the inside. He was being much more aggressive than he normally is. He couldn't just box from the outside. So he kind of was going after Pacheco early on. Pacheco was having fun, smiling, making a miss, slipping, sliding, you know, sticking the jab on him. And then as the fight wore on, he starts to put out more output. And was really laying leather on Nelson. And Nelson, like you said, super, super tough. But he was getting broken down. He got outclassed, outworked, and broken down late in the fight. I'm surprised he actually made the distance.
I know. I was from the seventh round on, I was like, all right, this is going
to
end
11-12
anytime.
Were pretty rough.
11-12. He actually won the 11th, Nelson.
Yeah.
But he finished strong in the 12th.
He got hit with big shots, though. He had the fight back. No, I'm sorry. It was the 10th round where he was looking really rough and had a tough round. And even Todd Grisham was saying, like, oh, it could be over soon. He could go down. Yeah. And then 11, he came back, you know, fighting to stay in the fight. And then 12 was another bad round.
Nelson went from potentially being stopped in the seventh round. This was his big moment. 36 years old. They must have mentioned that about 100 times in the broadcast that he's like an old man. He's 36. He's a grown man. He's 36 years old. He's old man. Old man. I kept saying that over and over. Obviously, this was his like big shot. And he went from a seventh round getting stopped potentially to making it to the final bell, winning a round late, admirable, like, will be on other cards, like, no longer just Terrence Crawford's friend. Yeah, he's 36, but I suspect to see him as a B-side for a lot of 168-pounders. So he did well for himself last night, Steven Nelson. I think he won over a lot of fans, won over me. I know he won over you and your brother watching and a lot of fans at home, for sure. Now, Pacheco, like, he was just always in control, very poised. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And a lot of times boxing fans will look at poise as, oh, why isn't he like stepping on the gas? Why isn't he throwing 80 punches like Benavidez does? He threw 40 punches around. He threw 39.6 punches around, which I think you can raise that up, because when he puts his combinations together, Pacheco, it's like a thing of beauty. And
absolutely,
he can't miss with
damaging
that right hand. Right?
Damaging. He varies right hand up really well. He can counter with it. He was fighting really well off the back foot last night. He was able to pull and throw that right hand over the top a bunch of times. He switched up to an uppercut at times because of the head movement from Steve Nelson. So it was impressive. I mean, he showed a variety and versatility I didn't know that he had. And it seemed to me like it was by design. I want to show you guys, look at these things I can do. And is it going to be the most scintillating performance? No. But was he dominant? Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, I saw some mixed reviews of him. I thought ultimately he's 23. But here's the thing, another thing too, Chris, when you are in the streaming era of boxing, where he was a main event, like even going on like 3+ years now of him being main events on Matchroom shows, whether they're in Mexico, whether in the UK, and we're able to watch him, his development very closely. So when you get to this level and he's only 23 and he's not like blowing this guy out of the water, Steven Nelson, who was physically overmatched, then there's going to be a little bit of criticism, even if it's not warranted. Like, oh, why isn't he like a full, why isn't he a finished product at 23 with that reach and all those God-given skills and abilities? But he's not. I mean, he's only 23. Like, he's still early. Like, Canelo fight, pump the brakes. But then again, Canelo needs opponents. So, like,
and we're,
I put him
we're
on a short list.
And where Pacheco's at in terms of his career, like, he's on the precipice of huge, huge things. You can't just take risks and go out there and just fight recklessly just to, you know, have the make all the fans happy. One, you're never going to make all the fans happy. But two, man, at the end of the day, win and keep moving forward. This kid has the potential to be, like, top in the sport. So we're not, you don't need to take silly risks just so X isn't mad at you. So I thought the performance was good. I liked what I saw.
Definitely want to see him maybe put the punches together a little more. It's funny because he trains alongside Benavidez. Jose Benavidez Sr. Was in the corner. So he's got a busy couple days ahead of him.
He's got quite a stable. Quite a stable.
But it's funny to see like him. Like Benavidez is just a 70 punch fighter around. Then you have Pacheco who's 35 to 40. So it just shows the versatility.
It's personality. People don't, yeah. I think people forget that a lot of the way fighters fight is based on their personality. You know, like I was a technical guy. I'm a educated guy. That's kind of the way I fought, you know, and it kind of goes that way. You know, some guys out of the ring, they're complete animals. Guess what? They're animals. They, you know, when they're animals in the ring, a lot of times they're animals outside the ring too.
Toro Gotti.
Toro Gotti. Man, he went as hard in the club as he did on fight night.
Right. Toro Gotti's not stepping into that ring and moving around in there. He's not stepping into that bar and have his back against the wall.
And just having a few cocktails.
He's on the bar. Shirt is off.
Yep. Stealing your girl. Knocking out a cop. Like that's what you get. The personality often goes hand in hand with how you fight in the ring.
That's awesome. I definitely agree. So maybe, yeah, Pacheco seems like a very poised guy.
Super
when I
chill,
saw him interviewed after the fight, I'm like, dude, this guy's 23 and he's got it all together. So
I've interviewed him firsthand a bunch of times on a bunch of matchroom shows. And yeah, absolutely, very poised, well-spoken, very, very even-keeled personality, especially for a young man. So having him train next to Benavidez doesn't mean it's going to rub off like a osmosis or something. Like, oh, all of a sudden, you know, you're going to start throwing a million punches. But that also shows how good of a coach Senior is.
Yeah,
because he's got guys that are very different in terms of their physical capabilities, and yet they're still very successful at using their own style.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And so afterwards, they're talking about who's next, right? Of course, Pacheco's ranked top six by three of the four organizations. Canelo's looking for an opponent in May. Obviously, he's not ready for Canelo, but we've seen Canelo fight guys that were not ready for him. I'm not saying he's out of the... He's definitely on the short list for Canelo in May, just because of the match room and just because of... We're just running out of bodies before he fights Crawford in September. But if you're going by like what should really be next, Edgar Berlanga versus Diego Pacheco at 168, both under the match room banner, both around the same in terms of skills, even though Berlanga's had that Canelo fight already. That's an awesome fight. I need to see that.
It's a fight that's been talked about for a long time. I know Pacheco's team definitely wants it. They've mentioned it in the past, and they're ready yesterday. The fight does make a lot of sense. Chances of it happening, especially next, I don't see it. Maybe down the line a little bit. Berlanga has to get back in the win column. He's not going to come back with a Pacheco fight.
He's fighting in March, sure. Berlanga.
Yeah.
In Puerto Rico.
So I don't see that fight even next after that for Berlanga. I feel like that fight would need to be a little seasoned.
I don't know what Berlanga's looking for. Like, this is what happens when you fight Canelo and you know you come back. And, like, he definitely has some market value, and he's definitely like a name now because of that Canelo performance and holding his own and just being on that stage and just kind of like helping the promotion as well. Yeah, so it's like,
what's the path after Canelo? Because if you look at his past opponents, you look at Munguia. We were thinking Munguia coming right back was a good thing. He gets the win in September, and then he comes back in December, gets knocked out. You look at Caleb Plant after Canelo kind of disappears for a bit, but then comes back and fights Benavidez, showed improvement actually, and then you know has even since then become better and better and showing more facets to his game. So do you come right back? Do you take some time? It's hard to figure it out because we've.
Well,
seen
I also mean like, will he ever? Like, why would he fight a Pacheco? Why would his first big fight, whether it's next or in this year, why would his first big fight post Canelo be Pacheco? I just don't see that. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's a low risk, I mean high risk, low reward type of fight. Like a Plant makes way more sense. Like if you can get a Charlo, I doubt it. He's like his own name. He's a name now. And I know Matchroom's going to build him into that. So a risky fight with Pacheco doesn't make much sense as much as I want to see it. Maybe a Mobili would look good with Pacheco. Point being is Pacheco needs that next step.
I'd like to see how
he
would deal with that aggression. That'd be interesting.
The next step Pacheco needs is like maybe one more Steven Nelson type, but like get into the get to that next rung.
He's another guy. Just to your point about Berlanga, he's a high risk, low reward fighter. Is Pacheco at this point because he's on the way up? Everyone sees where he's going to be. Do you want to be another notch on his belt on the way up? Yeah, that's. I think a lot of guys are going to be worried about that.
I thought Pacheco looked good. Steven Nelson's going to get some more big fights out of it. Nice, fun main event. Andy Cruz fought on the co-main event. I thought he looked really good.
That boy, good, man. I like him. I like his style.
Did you notice he stood in trade more?
Yes, absolutely. And Omar, who I've had on ProBox TV, actually knocked out Chris Colbert in his last fight. He's a tough guy to stay in the pocket with. He's strong. He's physical. He's young. He's hungry. He's out of that Benavidez camp as well. So the fact that Andy Cruz is maturing into his professional style the way that he is with the level of fighters that he's fighting as well. Because the Moran fight, that was super impressive. Moran, he's another super tough guy who's coming from the ProBox table. And stable, excuse me. Stay in the pocket. That fight got the knockout. So I'm really impressed with Andy's progression so far.
Did you see the interaction? I know you did because you sent it to me. The interaction between the Andy Cruz Keyshawn was like the most high school
yard. The schoolyard little spat between these two.
Cruz goes up to him after calling him his son for like the last 3 years. Sees Keyshawn, tries to give him like a handshake, and Keyshawn like gives him like
a little pound
like dead fish, and then like turns his back. It was just like so high school, hilarious.
Like, but it was funny. Even Shakur, like he was like, how's this gonna go? Shakur like paled. How are these two gonna interact right now? He's like, am I about to throw hands with somebody? What are we doing?
It's not heated enough. Like Keyshawn wasn't about to give him like that time of day to like just like drawing at each other. Because Keyshawn's way ahead of him in the pro rank. Like he is about to be a world champion
fighting for a world title.
In 2 weeks. And Cruz is, 4-0, 29, which I didn't realize he was 29. I knew he was older. Didn't realize he was 29, Andy Cruz.
Interesting that Keyshawn was out last night. I just thought about that. I mean, the fight's 2 weeks away.
Well, he lives in Vegas, right? He told us. And he trains in Vegas.
Still, I don't know.
Need a night out. Step out. He wasn't drinking.
It's 2 weeks out. I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
That was not my style.
You were
even late in my career. Like I would like work, like commentating while I was still fighting, and people would always be like, "It's not great that Algeria's out."
What do you expect? To just be inside?
Yeah, no. That's what training camp is, man. That's what it is. That's what when I was at my peak. Yes, I was just inside.
I saw Tank at the CVS eating SpongeBob ice cream.
Yeah, that was fight week though. He ice cream's crazy, but
he told me he could not stay in the room anymore. He was getting stir crazy.
So a lot of fighters do. They gamble. A lot of guys.
Keith Thurman.
Love kissing. Thurman would be up all night.
Remember before Pacquiao, he was spotted.
Yep.
In hindsight, looked awful because he got knocked down the first round. One of the biggest roars I've ever heard at a fight was.
That was unexpected. That was crazy. I was like, whoa.
I was ringside
still
for Pacquiao Thurman. And everyone thought Thurman was going to win that. Everyone was afraid that this was going to be like Pacquiao gets finally get that beat down that we thought was going to come for years because he's older. Guy knocks down Thurman in the first round. That place went erupted.
What was 41? What was he, 41 that night?
41. That's that was an awesome promotion. That was an awesome fight. Fox, PBC on Fox, Pacquiao Thurman, July 2019. I loved being there. That was a fun one. Ernesto Mercado, you like this kid. Oof. I do too.
Stud. That kid is a machine. He looked dangerous, deadly against Pedraza, who, as of late hasn't looked great. He's dropped three in a row now. He lost to Keyshawn Davis. He got stopped, but he was at 135. I thought that was not a great idea for someone older to go back down to weight at that point in their career. Keyshawn beats him, but obviously Keyshawn's Keyshawn. Before that, he lost to Barboza, which is at 140. Put up a decent fight, though. Won some rounds in that fight. But this, Mercado is just a tank. He came out. He looked big. He looked strong. And he throws everything with bad intentions.
Yeah, he's
really
big.
Really impressive performance.
He's tall. He's like 5'11", 135. Immediately calls out Shakur after the fight. Shakur screaming back at him. That's good, too. Get the attention of Shakur. Even if you're not going to get anywhere near that guy in for years, but, you know, get some hype around your name. Clout chasing, kids call that.
So I interviewed him a couple, probably like a year or two ago. And, you know, I'd seen some of the fights that he had, some of the wins he had posted. He's been fighting, you know, a pretty tough schedule, you know, early on. And interviewing him, you know, not a whole lot of personality. He seems like he's come into his own. You see him now talking a little trash, calling these guys out, walking up to them, pointing at, you know, after the fight, saying things in the lead up. You know, he said he was going to knock out Pedraza leading up to the fight. So I like his progression, not only inside the ring, but what he's doing outside of the ring in terms of building his profile. And
yeah,
he's 17-0 now. I mean, he's
got the right promoter.
Built up quite a record thus far. And you said 35. Is it 35 or 40? No, he's 40.
Hey, he fought at one super lightweight, he said. Oh, wait, 140?
Super lightweight is 40, yeah.
Yeah.
142.
So why the hell was he calling out Shakur then? Because he was in his peripheral vision?
Yeah, I'm like, he's not. He
looked around ringside and saw him and goes, I mean, even though Shakur, I think, will probably be at 140 soon.
Yeah, potentially. But also, you know, Keyshawn was with them too, and he's talked about going up to 40. I could see that too. So
good weekend of fight. Dalton Smith also fought. That guy is knocking on the door of a title shot at 140.
Yeah.
Clemmy really belts. Explosive. Opponent was not good. Didn't take much from that. I didn't need to watch that to know that Dalton Smith is really good, and he's got the Matchroom hype train behind him. So he'll
throw everything hard. That could
everything like
heaters.
A fastball. Fastball, yeah. fastball, power pitcher. He fought over earlier in the day, so he'll get in the mix, especially at 140, which is like becoming could be a wasteland soon if guys are moving all around. That's really it from this weekend. The next time you hear from us will be February. January kind of sucked. There was not a lot of big fights.
January kind of sucked.
It sucks in more ways than one. It's the worst month of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
in life,
dry January. It's cold. Yeah,
sucks.
No, not a lot of fights. Sucks.
Nothing. It's just like
slow start.
Workout. You know, do what you got to do. Watch shows and just get to the light at the end of the tunnel. Light at the end of the tunnel is the February for boxing fans. This might be the best month of boxing ever in a long time. The February 1st card that we'll be at with Benavidez Morel. Obviously, the February 22nd super card. Is like six unbelievable fights. You have
you got the Keyshawn fighting for a title. His first
Keyshawn
title,
fighting for the accept. Keyshawn fighting for the title mid February. Derek Chisora fighting Aldo Valin. It's in front of my face, so I'm gonna read it out.
I like Aldo Valin. He's a cool guy. And Chisora has had an incredible career. I think this is his last one. So it's something. It's not the greatest matchup, but
Catterall Barboza February 15th.
Talk about not the greatest matchup.
Duarte Progre, sneaky fun fight. February
interesting
15th.
Fight. Interesting fight. That's a tough fight for Progre. I'm telling you, Duarte is he's turning out to be a damn good fighter.
Brian Norman, remember him?
Yeah,
that guy. Talk about fumble in the bag. He remember when he gave up the Boots fight? Not Boots is fighting Stanionis. Mm-hmm. With eyes on 154 in this tournament. Like, he's out of the picture, Norman, bro. It could all change so fast. He's fighting. Is this him? No, this is not him. This is Brian Norman Sr., light heavyweight. But anyway, Brian Norman, just an excuse.
Who's
to
he
kinda...
fighting, though? He's fighting.
Brian Norman is fighting soon.
Yeah, but who's he fighting?
This is Brian Norman Sr. fighting on BLK Prime against Greg Hackett.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, those were names I just threw there. February 22nd, the Better BF Bivol, Dubois, Parker, Stevenson, Schofield, Adamas, Shiraz, Virgil Ortiz, Majumov, Zhang, Caballel, Bawazi, Calum Smith. That's
yikes.
My brain can't comprehend that card.
There's so many people. It's so deep. I actually just noticed last night that Calum Smith and Bawazi are fighting. It's a good fight. I like that fight. I'm a big fan of Bawazi. I like where he's going. That's a good name for him to have on his record, and also a very dangerous puncher to see how he can deal with that. So it's a good fight. It's a sneaky good
Wild.
Fight.
Wild. The fact Virgil Ortiz Majumov could be the fourth fight of the night.
That's a hard fight to pick. I'm very torn on that fight. Majumov looked so good. I mean, he has. I knew how good he was, but a lot of people didn't until the Crawford fight. But Virgil struggled with Mahochuk. That's so
Yeah, I don't know how I'm picking that one.
Yeah, that's a hard one to pick.
We're going to have to do our head-to-head picks, and there's going to be a lot of content leading up to this card because these are, like, some hard fights to pick.
Those are the ones we like. Those are the ones we like. We like the ones that give Vegas a hard time.
I love that. I love seeing Vegas squirm a little bit. They can't put down their minus 5,000 favorite.
Ugh.
You know, they got to actually, like, oh, boy, we might lose some money.
Oh, we got to work. We got to work today, huh? Okay.
We might lose some money. These fans might win. All right, everybody. Next time you see us, we'll be in Las Vegas for a very fun fight week for Benavidez and Morel. Order it on PPV.com. Any final words from you, Chris?
No, man. I'm just excited for Vegas.
Always.
And this is the start of a lot of traveling, so getting my miles in.
Love it. Protect yourself at all times. Keep your hands up at all times. Stay out of those DMs unless you have a meat cave for us.